Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
In 2003, in Houston, Texas, an entire family was almost wiped out by a masked intruder who'd broken into their home. It appeared that it was a burglary that had turned deadly, but evidence at the crime scene just didn't support this theory. A murder investigation was launched, but with few leads, police were baffled by the seemingly motiveless crime until shocking evidence came to light, suggesting the true perpetrator was someone much closer to home. This is what happens when a narcissistic, sociopathic son is prepared to do anything to get what he wants. This is the case of Bart Whittaker. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. The case today is one of those that is just totally mind-boggling, also obviously very intriguing, because I think it shows you the depths and depravity of individuals that can be really close to us, but that we have no idea actually exists within those people. Also, before I continue, just a nice shout out to all of you YouTube membership and Patreon subs. Thank you so much. The reason I can do this is because of you. I appreciate you all massively. But if all you can ever do is just come back and watch my content, then believe me, you also mean the world to me. So let's go back to 2003. We've got 54-year-old Kent and 51-year-old Patricia Whittaker. And they are living in a really nice area. It's an affluent place, Sugar Lakes neighborhood in Sugarland. Sounds absolutely delicious. It's actually a wealthy suburb of Houston, Texas. They're living there with their two children, who they dote on. So they've got their eldest son, 24-year-old Thomas Bartlett Whittaker. Now I'm going to refer to him as Bart. And he also had a younger brother, 19-year-old Kevin. Now they're a really close family. And I would say, as far as people who knew them are concerned, and from all intents, from the outside looking in, they absolutely appear to be the American dream, the absolute perfect family. And Bart and his father were really close. They had this real passion for biking. So they go on really long bike rides together. And Kevin, he was somebody who really looked up to Bart. As his older brother, he revered him, so to speak. He loved what he did. And Kent and Patricia were just the most doting parents. They gave their sons everything that they could possibly wish for. They were very affluent, so money was genuinely no objective. And just to put this in perspective, they bought Bart a car and they paid for him to have a townhouse when he was at university so he could live there. I mean, that in itself is such a luxurious position for a young person to be in. When parents just take responsibility and accountability for you, want to see you thrive and grow and develop, and also are willing to put their hands in their pockets to make that possible. So essentially, this family is genuinely living the dream. People believe that they're incredibly close, and there is nothing that has really stood out that would give us cause for concern up until this point. But then we get to the 10th of December 2003, and the family are out. They're enjoying the celebratory meal. This is at the Papado Seafood Kitchen. It's in Stafford, Texas. And they're all together and they're celebrating, because that very weekend, Bart was graduating from Sam Houston State University, which is a big deal. So before they even leave the restaurant, because they're in such good spirits and they're feeling really proud of Bart, Kent and Patricia, they go ahead and give him this amazing graduation gift. It's a Rolex watch. So this has been a really lovely night out. And we have Bart yet again receiving something incredible just to give him a positive stroke on the back because he's succeeded in his education. So the family leave the restaurant, they travel back home. It's about 8:20 p.m. when they arrive back home. Now, Kevin gets out of the car first. He unlocks the door of the family home. Then his mother, Patricia, she follows behind him. But Bart, he's basically left his mobile phone in his Chevy Yukon that was parked on the street. So he ends up going back to retrieve it. We all know how we are when we leave our mobile phones somewhere. We tend to just want to go and get it straight away. And his father just instinctually waits for him. So he's kind of a little bit behind his son and his wife. Now, Kevin, he enters the house just like he has done every single day for his entire life. And then the unimaginable happens. He has absolutely no idea that as he walks in, he's disturbed an intruder. And that intruder is armed, dressed in black, even wearing a balaclava. So as Kevin walks into the dining room, he's just shot in the chest. Didn't stand a chance. And the bullet penetrated his heart. And they said that death would have been almost instant. This boy was 19. He's actually still holding his car keys in his hand. And his mother, of course, she's completely taken by surprise. And before she even has a chance to register what on earth has happened, she gets shot in the chest as she walked through the door. Now, by this point, Kent's made it to the front porch, obviously he's heard what's going on. And then he ends up getting shot and the bullet enters his left chest. It actually lodged in his shoulder. It missed his heart by inches. And as he lies bleeding, he literally hears his wife's last dying breaths. And even though this chaos and tragedy is playing out in front of him, he's still able to kind of notice that he sees this gunman. And because this is just so strange and out of body almost for him, he actually thinks at that moment in time it's one of his son's friends just playing a practical joke with a paintball gun. It's incredible psychologically how your brain tries to protect you from the horror of what's going on. And in this situation, it almost creates a parody where none of this is really happening. It's just all a bad joke. Now, another reason why he's having those thoughts that this just doesn't seem to be real is because these guys live in such an affluent neighborhood. Crime's virtually non-existent, but sadly this isn't a joke. And Bart's life, the elder son, probably saved on account of being the last to enter because he ends up struggling with this intruder. And at that point, he gets shot in the upper arm. But obviously because of that ruckus, the intruder leaves. And a neighbour has actually heard gunshots and has come over, which is incredibly heroic. And he ends up using his T-shirt to stem the blood from Kent's bullet wound. In between this all happening, Bart's calling the police, explaining that his family have just had this intruder shoot them. He's saying, you know, I've just fought with the gunman. I've chased him out the back door. And the officers obviously arrive very quickly at the property. This is literally unheard of in the area. These kind of crimes do not occur. And when you think about what I've just described, we're talking about in a matter of seconds, a really happy family celebration has just turned into this crime scene. When the emergency services arrive to see how the family is, Kevin's immediately pronounced dead at the scene, but Patricia's still alive. So when the paramedics arrive, they're desperate to save her life. She's airlifted to hospital, but she later succumbs to her gunshot wounds as she had been absolutely...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information.
Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
They traumatically shot in the chest, so it was highly unlikely she could have ever survived those injuries. Kent and Bart, they're also taken to the hospital. Now, they both survived, but it's worth noting that Kent had been critically injured. It's surprising that he managed to survive. And then, of course, the police are now dealing with a murder investigation. It's as simple as that. One of the things that they find early on is a leather glove found on the pavement, in fact, next to Bart's car. They also are able to quickly find the murder weapon, and that's on the kitchen floor next to the back door. Apparently, the killer had dropped it before fleeing the property. Now, what's interesting, stroke concerning about that gun, is it actually belonged to Kevin. So it had been a birthday gift from his older brother Bart to him. So in this horrific and tragic twist of irony, the intruder had basically got into the house, broken into the gun safe where the weapon was kept for protection, and Kevin was killed with his own gun. He was killed with his own birthday present. Now, when the police start to ask questions of Bart and Kent, neither of them are very able to actually give them a lot of information about the intruder. You know, he'd been wearing this black clothing, and Bart actually said that I think it was somebody who was potentially black. But Kent said, no, I don't think it was, because as far as I'm concerned, when I was looking at him and I caught sight of him, I'm sure there was white skin around the eye hole of the balaclava. So they're even giving mixed signs and messages about who the potential perpetrator could be. Now, on the face of it, when the police are first drawing in all of the information around them, it seems like it had been a break-in that had turned into this horrific and unnecessary double murder. Essentially, the family have come home, they've disturbed the unwitting burglar, and that burglar's reacted and killed them. But then the officers start seeing these discrepancies. And they're used to home invasions. They know what people are looking for in home invasions. It's all about getting what you can so that you can sell the gear and pass it on to make some money. And therefore, you're going to expect certain traits within the crime scene. But this crime scene looks staged. First of all, everything just appears to be far too neat and tidy. There's order in the way that things look, considering what we've just described as this horrific murder after a home invasion gone wrong. Everything should be chaotic. So first of all, they can't find any sign of forced entry. In fact, what they believe is that the back door had actually been left open. And in the master bedroom, which you would expect would be one of the places that an invader would go and immediately look, because if it's in the master bedroom, the parents are going to be the people who have that room, and that's probably going to lead you to things like jewellery and money. But when they get to that master bedroom on the first floor, it's like every drawer's just been slightly opened, but there's been no rifling through them. There's nothing essentially out of place on the floor through those drawers being kind of opened and then disheveled because somebody's looking for jewellery, etc. In fact, the only thing that was noticeably out of place was a pillowcase on the floor. On top of this, there were loads of expensive items still around, and they were on display, and they'd been left untouched. So you just have to imagine, if you're going to steal items and there were all these lovely expensive items on display, they're the first things that are going to end up in your bag. But no, they've been ignored. And then this staging of the drawers just being slightly disturbed seems to have taken place. And those expensive items included things like computers, video and audio, electronic equipment, silverware, jewellery. And the only thing that they could actually identify had actually been taken was some cash from the wardrobe in the master bedroom. But that's strange, because if you haven't been in that home, then arguably, you're just going to go for the things that you can see. It's like a magpie. What's sparkly? What can I remove quickly? Why would you not remove any of that and then go into a wardrobe where seemingly you wouldn't know there was any cash, surprisingly find it and take that? That says to me it's as if the intruder actually knew where to look. And that also demonstrates that whatever the killer's primary motive was, It certainly hadn't been to steal from the house. And then there's more suspicions raised by the investigators because they find out where the actual murder weapon had originally been kept. And it's in the weirdest place because it was in a gun safe in a built-out crawl space in Kevin's second floor bedroom. Like, think about that. How on earth would anyone know where Kevin kept that gun? You'd have to be informed, wouldn't you? Because it was in such a strange place that the last thing that an intruder is going to do, if they've not even managed to steal the jewellery on display, is literally crawl into some space and find the gun safe and remove it. Makes no sense whatsoever. In fact, the only things that we've talked about so far that have been removed and used is the money from the wardrobe, which makes no sense, and now a gun from a crawl space. So that would mean that the intruder had come unarmed for a start. And yet, in spite of that, it's escalated from this home invasion with plenty that they could have removed quickly to a double homicide. It's like, again, this intruder knew exactly where the gun safe was, which is in this crawl space. Also, they had to pry it open with a tool to access the weapon inside. And this gets curiouser and curiouser, because even more bizarrely, it seems that the intruder, who's entered the house completely unarmed, had somehow known exactly what ammo to bring for the gun. So its magazine contained 6 rounds of Corbon ammunition, and 4 rounds that had been discharged were the same type of ammo. However, whilst there was alternative ammunition that had been kept in the house, there was no Corbon ammo. So therefore, that again means that whoever has come into this home had some prior knowledge. This is making absolutely no sense whatsoever. The police bring in 3 bloodhounds called James Bond, Quincy, and Columbo. I respect those names. I think we all do. If you're gonna have a bloodhound, I think calling them James Bond, Quincy, and Columbo is just beautiful. So they bring them to the crime scene, and each dog tracks back from the back door where the killer had fled to Bart's vehicle, which is parked on the street in front of the house. And this is where that abandoned leather glove had been found. And this just doesn't sit right with investigators. And they start thinking to themselves that something's going on here. Bart knows more about this attack than he's telling us. And bear in mind, if you have just lost your mother and brother in the most heinous of ways, you're going to want to do everything that you can to inform them of what you know. And they feel that it's holding back. Now, a break arrives 2 days later. At this point, detectives have received this information, and it's information from a reporter, and that reporter has done some digging. It's really interesting because the media gets a bad rep for a lot of things, but when it comes down to this kind of investigation and inquiry, often it is these kind of reporters that find things that investigators aren't aware of, and they do. So they discover that not only had Bart not graduated from Sam Houston State University, you know, where he'd just been given the Rolex because his parents were praising him. Yeah, he hadn't even graduated from there. Worse, he hadn't even been enrolled there for some time. So allegedly he'd skipped loads of classes, people had started to get upset with him who were teaching him, and in the end they'd just thrown him out of the institution. He was on academic probation. Now, at that point, as opposed to doing whatever's needed to regroup and return yourself into the academic situation, he ends up just blowing his tuition on fun activities, on recreational activities. And the police then go and check that with the university and they say, yeah, all true. That's exactly what's happened. And Bart, at this point, had actually been working as a supervisor in the food service department of Bentwater Country Club. So the investigators can see this is a complete mismatch to the reality that his parents have been living. And they go and confront Bart with this. And at that point, he says, yeah, it's true. I have failed to graduate, but I had actually already told my mother about this. Now, of course, that's deeply convenient, isn't it? That the one person that he's apparently and allegedly told about his academic woes was his mother, and she's also dead. So investigators, of course, can't corroborate this claim. And also, it speaks volumes, because if she really knew that he'd failed, why would she be going along with getting him a Rolex watch? I mean, even if your partner wanted to get your child one under the illusion that they've done well at university, you would say, oh, maybe not this time, you know, maybe we'll wait, because you'd know that that person was lying. So that doesn't make sense either. And like I said, it can't be corroborated, so we can all imagine that it's a fabrication. Now, there's another break. This is a bigger break, so to speak. This comes a few days later, 15th of December, 2003. So Adam Hitz, a guy who attended the same high school as Bart, he relays this really interesting, and I mean interesting stroke, very disturbing information to detectives. So he's heard about the shootings on the news, and it really provokes some unease. So he says, you know what? A few years ago, Bart actually recruited me to kill his family. And he said that when he was talking about reflecting on this particular setup, that Bart had wanted to inherit his parents' share of the family construction business, and he also wanted his family's estate. The family estate was valued about $1.5 million. So Hip is actually able to outline in detail to police the plan that had actually been agreed with Bart. So first of all, another of Bart's acquaintances is a guy called Justin Peters. He was a former roommate. He had the job to actually supply the murder weapon. Then Bart was going to go out for a meal with his family, leaving the back door unlocked so he could then make sure the intruder can gain entry to the house. And then the killer was meant to wait in the dining room until the family returned. And at this point, he was meant to shoot dead Bart's parents and younger brother. And he was also advised that to avoid suspicion, because Bart was going to be the sole heir to the family fortune, he wanted Hip to shoot Bart in the arm. I mean, just going to say, sounds alarmingly familiar to the crime that actually played out. I mean, there is literally nothing missing, is it? Striking similarities, striking circumstances of the actual killing. And it's not lost on the investigators.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Because it feels like this guy has just described a blueprint to murder. In fact, some of the investigators actually believe that Hip knew so much about the actual killings that he could be the killer. But they do some checks on him, and it turns out that he couldn't have been. He was working late on the night of the shootings. So now they're really aware that they don't need to be looking too far outside the home to find out exactly why this crime has played out, what the motivation was, and of course, who is their absolute suspect. So now the police want to track down Justin Peters. So that's Bart's former roommate at Baylor University, because obviously he was the person who was meant to provide the weapon. He happily confirms Hip's version of events. And he said, listen, I actually had the date that the killings were meant to be planned for, and that was the 5th of April 2001. But essentially, the plan failed because details of the plan had been reported to the police by a college friend of Bart's, who obviously is pro-social and actually took it seriously. Now, the authorities at this point, they actually alerted the family. So this plan to kill them, the police told the family that they suspected that Bart was doing this. Now, Kent and Patricia, they just decided that the information wasn't credible. Bart had claimed it was just a joke, it was a misunderstanding, and I can imagine that if somebody came home and told me that one of my children had organized to kill me, knowing and loving them in the way I do, I just wouldn't want to believe it. And if you think about psychopaths who are chameleons, it's quite possible that somebody can seem like a perfectly normal human being in your world and all the while just be imagining how they can exploit you. But you don't know, because as far as you're concerned, they're somebody of great meaning. So even though they get this information, it just doesn't resonate with them in a way where they take it seriously. Now, Peters, he reveals that he'd actually been recruited by Bart to kill his family before this as well, along with another student, a guy called Will Anthony. And so the killings had originally been meant to take place in December 2000. But again, this plan had also failed. And the reason that that plan had failed is an alarm had been triggered at the Whittaker family home after a window had been opened. So this is two potential attempts at murdering his own family by enlisting the help and support of others. And it's incomprehensible for me to connect with the fact that he managed to find individuals who thought this was a suitable possibility. So we're not talking about these individuals going, no, that's not going to happen, what a terrible idea, stop it. We're talking about individuals who actually were going ahead. And if it hadn't been thwarted by somebody going to the police and telling them that this was a plan and the police acting on that, or that alarm being triggered at the family home, these killings could have happened earlier on. And these individuals could have been privy to it and been willing to go through with it. Now, the police at this point are obviously focusing all of their attention on Bart, and they start to look back in his history. It turns out he isn't quite the golden boy that people would have liked to have believed who knew him. Turns out that he'd got a prior arrest record. So he'd previously broken into his high school. He'd stolen computers from there, something that he would never need to do, because we're talking about a guy who's got a lot of money at his disposal. His parents are very affluent, they're very generous, but he's doing that, and that says something about his nature. Psychologically, when we think about, shall we say, antisocial personality disorder, individuals like that are literally able to go and do things that they shouldn't do just because they enjoy knowing that they can. So it's not just about wanting something for gain and attainment because of a required thing like wanting to make money. It's actually about just knowing that you can get one over on people. And he's doing that. And criminality, we also absolutely see when it comes down to the backgrounds of psychopaths. Also, this plot to kill. You couldn't be more predatory and exploiting of the people that you love than actually wanting to kill them so that you make money on the back of their hard work and their life achievements. But we're seeing this malevolence throughout. Now, his family, once he gets caught for breaking into the high school and stealing these computers, they actually transfer him to a different school. And that's a problem, because again, it's low consequential experience. This guy does something really naughty, and the way that his parents manage that is to try to avoid the situation and deny it to some degree by placing distance between him and a new school. So it seems like, with respect, he was more a prodigal than perfect son. I'd say that that is very clear. So on the surface, they want him to be this perfect child, but actually, underneath it, you scratch the surface and he's rotten to the core. Now, the investigation progresses and two more people of interest get identified. There's a guy called Stephen Champagne and a guy called Chris Brashear. Now, these are another two of Bart's acquaintances. So they both work with Bart at the Brentwater Country Club. That's in Montgomery, Texas. Now, Brashear, he was also actually living in Bart's townhouse in Willis, Texas at the time of the killings. And apparently Champagne only lived a few doors down from them. So clearly these are individuals who know each other and have access to each other, and that gives them an opportunity to plan together. Now, Brashear and Champagne initially get interviewed by the police in January 2004. And at this point, they just deny any involvement whatsoever. Brashear says, look, I did see Bart on the day of the killings, but only to have lunch with him. And then I went back to my own room. I stayed there up until 10 p.m. And he claimed that he and Champagne and Champagne's girlfriend had then gone to a bar. So they've got this alibi, essentially. Now, DNA and scent samples get taken from both of the suspects. And at this point, the bloodhounds subsequently link Brashear's sample to the abandoned leather glove, the murder weapon, the open drawers in the master bedroom, the pillowcases, and the gun safe. I mean, incriminating beyond belief. Meanwhile, remember Hip? He'd already admitted his role in the failed 2001 murder plot. He ends up agreeing to help police in return for not actually being prosecuted. So at this point, he actually agrees to wear a wire so that he can speak with Bart, obviously hoping that Bart is going to incriminate himself in the actual killings. Now, during the conversation with Bart, he goes ahead and refers to the previous 2001 plan. And he like says to Bart, you know, this is really weird because you know that plan that you told us you wanted to institute? There are a lot of similarities to what you've just experienced with the death of your mother and brother. And he also says, look, what I'm worried about, Bart, is the police want to interview me. You know, I'm going to be taken into the station. I don't know what to say. And wow, the ploy works. Because Bart's really spooked and he actually offers Hip $20,000 to just totally lie about the plan regarding the 2001 opportunity that had been created and thwarted. Essentially, he's saying, look, if you get this $20,000, just say it never happened. You don't know anything about it. Now, of course, Bart doesn't realise that it's already been told to the police, and that's why this guy's wearing a wire unbeknownst to him. They also set up a mailbox, which is something that can receive the payment, and it's constantly monitored by the police. And on the 1st of April 2004, $240 in cash is delivered to the mailbox. And it's just so, again, confirming of how disassociated and narcissistic this individual is who's involved in setting up these murders. Because when he pays the money into that mailbox, according to the return address, it was from a K. Soze. Now, they can track the fact that the address was Bart's residence in Willis, Texas. But of course, who is Bart's favorite film character? Yeah. Kaiser Soze from the film The Usual Suspects. It just shows you what a game it is for Bart, the fact that he uses the title of that particular character, because that particular character outsmarts everyone. It's as simple as that. And he's setting himself up essentially as that mastermind. It's funny to him. Now, obviously, they've got the fact that it is Bart and he isn't that clever. And on top of that, they managed to get Bart's fingerprints, which is on the cash mailer. So this guy is not forensically sophisticated on any level, but he certainly has the superiority we expect to see in these kind of offenders. So the police have now identified the suspects. They're closing in. And it feels like Bart at this moment in time is really aware that this is occurring. He can feel the net drawing in closer and closer and closer. Now, on the 28th of June 2004, they basically find his car. It's abandoned. It's at an apartment complex in southwest Houston. In fact, its engine's still running, but there's no sign of Bart. Turns out as well that he's stolen $10,000 from his father, and he has just gone on the run. Because this guy has got absolutely no intention of ever being brought to justice for the heinous crimes he has committed. The police are desperate to bring him in. So they end up putting wiretaps on Brashear and Champagne's phones. And the whole premise is that they just hope that out of this trio, they're going to contact each other. They're going to implicate themselves further. And of course, the most important thing is that they want to have Bart's identification occur. They want to know where he is, where has he gone, where are his whereabouts. However, it turns out that this is just really frustrating for the investigators because the suspects didn't actually contact each other. Now, fortunately, there's a major break in the case. It comes on the 28th of August, 2005. This is more than 18 months after the killing. And at this point, Champagne makes direct contact with detectives. And he says, look, I just need to tell you everything. I want to let you know exactly what happened. And I imagine the motivation of this is that he's thinking, maybe we're going to get found out. And I don't want to be spending the rest of my life in prison. So at the subsequent meeting, Champagne's basically advised by investigators that he could potentially avoid prosecution as long as he tells the truth. And we see this again and again in plea deals. But you have to be honest. If you aren't honest, then you compromise the plea deal per se. So it's a serious thing when you agree to this. So Champagne at this point says, look, Brashear carried out the shootings. And the worst bit is, I actually took him from the murder scene. I was the driver. He said, I had no idea whatsoever that the murder was going to occur. It was only later that I discovered that. When I helped Brashear dispose of the items that had been used in the killings, I suddenly figured out, my God, I'm being implicated, being with this person and having helped them. Now, the problem is, whilst that seems very moral of this individual who just was unwittingly dragged into this murder plot without knowledge, when he actually goes ahead and takes a subsequent lie detector test, he massively fails it. And the problem with that is, if you're told when you're going to take a plea deal that you have to be completely open and honest, you're not going to find anyone accepting what you've said if you then are found out to lie, and therefore your words are shallow. And that immunity from prosecution, well, that's no longer an option. So at this point, he's implicated himself and he's also failed to protect himself from the prosecution per se. At this point, he decides that he's going to give a videotaped confession. And he says, okay, the game's up. I'm going to tell you the truth. Brashear and me were recruited by Bart, and we were recruited to kill his family. Brashear had been the shooter, and he had been the getaway driver, but he's complicit. He's an absolute cog in the wheel where this murder is being concerned and carried out. Now, after the shootings had occurred, he'd driven Brashear to the bridge over Lake Conroe, and this is where the items in the killings had been disposed of in a bag. And actually, the police were very fortunately able to get a canvas bag from the lake later down the line, and it contained various items, including a metal chisel, that was what was used to open the gun safe, a black glove, which was the one that was matching the one found at the crime scene, and also those all-important Corbon 9mm bullets. So Champagne and Brashear at this moment in time are subsequently arrested, that's September 2005, and of course, all the while, they are still searching for the main perpetrator, so to speak. The person who's organised these executions, Bart Whitaker. Now, as we know, this has been a plan for a long time where Bart Whitaker is concerned. And it turns out that he'd actually brought the topic up about killing his family with Champagne and Brashear in the summer of 2003. Now, initially, they thought it was just this joke. But it's obvious, as we know from the previous desires to murder his family, that he wanted to just gauge the reaction. You know, what if I say this? What if I just test out this idea? Will they show disgust, aversion, fear? And if they don't, have I got the foundations to push this further? Now, Champagne apparently had been really opposed to the plan initially, but Bart had said, listen, if you don't help, you're already guilty of conspiracy. Because at the end of the day, I've told you what's potentially going to happen and you haven't actually acted on this. And so therefore, apparently, Champagne has said, okay, well, I'll agree to be the getaway driver. Now, I don't think it takes anyone with any knowledge of crime to know that that makes it sound like a pile of BS. Because with respect, somebody can tell you that they want to do something. Somebody can joke with you about doing the most heinous of things. But if you don't get yourself involved, the most that you can be guilty of at that moment in time is not believing when somebody is creating this plan of action. You could arguably say to any investigator, yeah, he told me he was going to murder his family. I thought it was a joke. No one's going to be seeing you as a co-conspirator. But the minute that you get in a car and drive somebody away from a murder scene, you are bound to...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Right, you were looking at a hefty sentence in prison. But essentially, this is his excuse. Oh, I didn't know what else to do. I was basically blackmailed into the situation. So now what we know is the police have two of the three main players in this situation. And also, it's just, again, evidence of that really nasty nature that Bart has. He's been planning this again and again with different people, trying to ensure that he gets what he wants, which is essentially money. That's all he wants. He wants money. He wants to be able to have the freedom to do whatever he wants to do. And also, he doesn't want his reputation sullied because obviously he's a big failure and he doesn't want anybody to know that. So the easiest way to manage that situation is to murder the people who have created him, who have loved him, his brother who admires him, get them all out of the way so that his failure doesn't really matter. And now he's got an abundance of money that he can do what he wishes with. That's how dark his nature is. We get to the 14th of September 2005, and the police are actually contacted by a man who calls himself Mike Jones. Now, he says, I know where Bart is. I absolutely know where he is. He'd actually paid me $3,000 to get him where he was going, and he's in Mexico. Now, it transpires down the line that Mike Jones isn't just a driver. He's not just somebody who happened across Bart because he was paid to take him somewhere. Turns out he's actually a co-worker. It's a guy called Rogelio Rios. Now, he said that he wanted the 10K reward money on offer, and that 10K reward money was enough for him to basically go and rat on Bart. And it turns out that Bart had actually been living with Rios' father. That was in Mexico, and he was even using Rios' name. He'd found a new girlfriend, he'd been working in her father's furniture store, and allegedly he was like really popular. People really liked him, he was a hard worker, he'd made lots of friends, and he'd even spun this story, which is just totally unsurprising because clearly you give a narcissist an opportunity to kind of reinvent themselves. They're not going to reinvent themselves as, oh, I don't know, I'm just the boy next door. They're going to reinvent themselves as somebody super impressive. And clearly he hasn't got access to a lot of money, so he can't be the rich, successful business individual. So instead, he's a war hero. Yeah, basically he says that the reason he got that bullet wound was he'd been shot whilst fighting in Afghanistan. So he's created this whole backstory where people feel sorry for him, they praise him, they see him as a hero, and all the while we know what that bullet to the arm actually came from. Also at the time he was claiming that his mother was a prostitute and he was basically an orphan. So again, what's he getting across? Feel sorry for me, haven't I done well? Look at how I've really morphed into this pro-social human being who actually protects people, gets shot in Afghanistan, had this horrible upbringing with this mother who was a sex worker and didn't protect me. When what we really know is the real mother, she would have laid down and died for her son. So again, on a reputation level, he really has no care or concern about his history, no respect for his family. And after he's kind of created this web of lies, he'd moved to Monterey, and that was because he wanted to find more work. So he's basically created a whole new life for himself. So then on the 22nd of September 2005, after the FBI have been given this information, they then work with the Mexican officials, because obviously he's in a different country, and that means it's not as easy to just bring somebody back into the United States. So they work with Mexican officials to apprehend Bart. It's basically a job interview at a restaurant, and this is when they're able to return him to Texas. This is when, of course, he sees his father again for the first time. And the first thing that Kent says to Bart is, "You look well." And Bart replied, "Yes, I am, Dad. I'm just so sorry. I'm so sorry for all of it. It's all my fault." And apparently it was at that point that Kent realized, this is real. My son really is guilty. I can't imagine how that would have been for Kent. Because I guess you just want to believe that the police have got it wrong, that Bart's on the run because he's scared of being found guilty for something that he's completely innocent of. Because Kent is struggling, and I mean acutely struggling with the reality of this situation, acutely struggling to believe that his son could ever carry out these reprehensible actions. And yet, in that statement, it just fully confirms it for him, and he realizes that his son, yes, is his son, but is also a double murderer of his own brother and his own mother. We get to December 2005, so this is 2 years after the killing, and the state are very, very clear at this point. They're going to seek the death penalty in relation to Bart Whitaker. Now, even though I think that he fully deserves that without a shadow of a doubt, because just think about the kind of malevolence involved in these actions, the planning, premeditation, the aggravating factors. My God, you're killing your own much-loved brother who adores you, and mother, because she can be a cash cow, and attempt to kill your own father. You are a highly dangerous person, and I can imagine that very few people would feel that you needed to be saved. But at the same time, we have to remember that Kent is a surviving parent, and so emotionally, it is going to be a struggle for him. You might hate the actions of your child. You might resent what they've done and how they've transformed and created chaos in your life, have these stolen people that you love. But this is also your blood and flesh and skin. And the idea that they're now up for the death penalty is going to be emotionally very difficult for him. Now, 25-year-old Champagne, bear in mind he'd already assisted the state in its prosecution of Bart and Brashear, he gets to agree to this plea deal to a lesser murder charge. He gets 15 years in prison. And when it comes down to Brashear, they don't actually seek the death penalty there. They conclude that, as far as they were concerned, if Bart hadn't been influencing this particular individual, he would never have carried out the crimes. So they don't seek the death penalty because of that. And in the end, Brashear pleads guilty to murder in September 2007. He gets 30 years. So he does get a relatively harsh sentence, but we all know in the States, people are often locked up forever when they've committed a crime. So he does, to some degree, get a lesser amount of years than we've seen in other scenarios that are similar to this, particularly when we think about it being a planned and premeditated murder of an entire family. Now, unbelievably, during the preparations for the trial, the DA receives a Christmas card from Bart. And in this Christmas card, bear in mind that this guy wants to prosecute this guy and also send him to his death, Bart literally states in this Christmas card, he should keep his family in mind during holiday season. That is such a veiled threat. He's not doing from the goodness of his heart. He's not saying, oh, I really hope you have a great Christmas. He's letting him know, you better keep your eyes on your family because you never know quite what could happen. Again, that psychopathic streak just running through his veins. Now, even though Bart had literally attempted to have his father killed and successfully murdered his own mother and brother, Kent never stopped supporting him. He always fought his corner. And it's really difficult to imagine yourself in that position, because there is a part of me that believes that if my son had killed my other son and murdered my husband and essentially had malevolence and darkness running through his veins, if he'd literally fabricated his life before that event, pretending he'd succeeded at uni, and shown no remorse or conscience, just taking $10,000 and escaping to essentially get away with murder, I'm not sure that I could have supported him. But then I understand that Kent maybe has an ability that I simply don't, because he begs the prosecutors not to give his son the death penalty. And he goes so far as to actually pay for an attorney to fight against the capital murder charge. Now, this is despite huge, overwhelming evidence. And that evidence points out the guilt that he holds for the murders of his own family members. Now, in spite of that, Bart continues to just behave like an entitled, spoiled little bastard, if I'm honest. I don't know how else to say it. Maybe I could have found more appropriate words, but that's how he acts. He is horrible. So during a call that he has with his father from prison, he actually moans that he hasn't been offered a plea deal. Well, of course you haven't been offered a plea deal. Other people got a plea deal because they were the people who confessed about what occurred and how you planned it. Yes, you might not have got your hands dirty by pulling the trigger, but you were the reason that those individuals who you meant to have loved are dead. Why would you get a plea deal? You're the cold, calculating, manipulative killer in this situation. But that's how he feels. Somehow, people are being hard on him. Also, he started to complain about the representation that he had in court, and he said to his father he basically wanted the big guns representing him. And again, think about his father who's supporting him. And he's listening to this little brat of a child, this murdering psychopath, insists that he wants more. The narcissism involved in that kind of exchange is unimaginably huge. And he's saying this all the while to the man whose wife and son he'd killed for money, who he'd executed essentially, because he just wanted everything for himself. Now, there is actually a plea deal that was offered, and Bart refuses it. So when one arrives, because he's been moaning about the fact this hasn't arrived at all prior to this situation, he basically says no. So they offer him two charges of capital murder in relation to his mother and younger brother. And because he says no, he doesn't feel that he's happy with that. It means that the judge has to basically enter a plea of not guilty on his behalf. That means that there's going to be a trial, and that means that the consequences of that trial might be very severe. Bear in mind, if you haven't shown accountability and responsibility, if you haven't shown remorse, if you refuse a plea deal, then it's all on the table. What can happen? So we get to the trial in 2007, and this is where Champagne just gives an absolutely damning load of evidence against Bart. So first of all, he's able to intricately detail the plan to execute his family. So this is how it went. On the day of the killings, they'd even changed the license plates on Champagne's vehicle. Champagne had then stayed outside the restaurant waiting. And then when he sees Bart and obviously the unsuspecting family, and he's watching them celebrate this supposed graduation, he just sits patiently until they've finished the meal. And then when the family have left, he starts to follow behind them. And he parks in a street behind the house, just as he has been instructed by Bart. Now, after he's followed the family home, he basically receives this call from Bashir. And he tells him that he's actually in the Whittaker family home. But he also notes that he's lost one of his black gloves, obviously the black glove that turned up at the scene. Now, after the shootings have taken place, Bashir had then ran to his car, jumped in the back seat. He had a large amount of cash apparently with him in a white envelope. And this is because Bart had instructed them exactly where to find it in his parents' bedroom. Now, during that journey, that obviously Bashir is now taking Champagne away from the scene, he actually starts to describe the murders. And he states that when 19-year-old Kevin walked into the dining room, he basically pointed the gun at him. And Kevin literally smiled. And you can imagine it, can't you? Because he's probably thinking, what's this kind of joke? This isn't really happening. And there's that nervous reaction of the smile. And then he shoots him. And of course, his mother and father, he then shoots as well. And he just goes ahead with this absolutely heinous, horrific plan. And then, of course, he talks about staging that wrestle for the gun with Bart. Because clearly that was the whole premise, wasn't it? Make sure that he gets shot in his arm so he's not going to get mortally wounded. He's not going to bleed out. It's going to be okay. He'll survive it, but it's going to be enough to make it look like he's actually had a struggle with the intruder. So Bashir does that. As soon as he's shot Bart, he leaves by the back door. Then changes the number plates back, dumps the evidence in the lake, changes the clothes, and after that, they go out drinking. They use that stolen money that they've just taken from, as far as they're concerned, the murdered Whittaker family's home. And they use it to buy drinks. Now, a few months after the killings, Bart, Champagne and Brashear meet up. This is February 2004. And the reason for this is that Bart wants to question Champagne about what's gone on with the police. And what's really scary is that he added another element to the conversation that nobody was expecting. He said the job wasn't finished. And at this point, he coolly and calmly starts to discuss how they're going to kill his father. Because, of course, he wants everything. And even though at this moment the net might be closing in, he's still willing to take a risk. His father needs to be put out of the way. So this is an individual who's lost his mother, his brother who adored him, hasn't considered changing his actions. He isn't averse to what he's actually created. He's not dealing with the collateral of not having these people in his life and thinking, my gosh, what have I done? No, he's just thinking the job wasn't complete. The job needs to be completed. I can't imagine how Kent would feel hearing this kind of evidence, even though it doesn't seem to dissuade him from supporting his son. So we have Will Anthony, Justin Peters, Adam Hitt. They also all give evidence against Bart. And obviously this is about those earlier failed attempts where there were plots to kill his family that they didn't go through with. They talk about how Bart's highly manipulative, that he's really, really able to control people. And one of the things that Bart does is what psychopaths are known for. So a psychopath will look at you and they'll pretty much instantly know whether they can exploit you. They sniff out vulnerability. They can smell it, literally. And so he looks for people who are in that moment a little bit broken. And then he'd form friendships with each of them. And this would be where they were dealing with real low points in their lives. So Peters, for example, bless him, he'd just lost his girlfriend in a road traffic accident. So he's not thinking clearly. He's dealing with the throes of grief. And then Hip and Anthony, they'd actually been expelled from their courses. So essentially, they're also in a position where they're not sure where they're going. Money might be a problem. They've let people down. And Bart knew this. And he uses it to exploit their vulnerability. What a stone-cold psychopath would do. So we get to the 8th of March 2007. It just took 1.5 hours deliberation. Now, we all know if it's only 1.5 hours deliberation, they may as well not have left the room at all. The judge should have said, have you got your decision? Do you want to go and retire for a bit, have a sandwich? Oh, you've got your decision. Oh, it's guilty, is it? Yeah. Because clearly we know that if it's that short a time, it's going to go one way or the other. But with the evidence that we've talked about so far, when that deliberation occurs, it's clear he's going to get found guilty. And he does. He gets found guilty of 2 counts of capital murder. And then during the punishment phase of the proceedings, an amazing things happen, really. Bart's father, Kent, even his mother's brother, they both plead for leniency on his behalf. And they even take some responsibility. They say that Bart's been basically spoiled, that he's had loads of pressure on him to succeed, and essentially that's why he's decided that the only way out is to murder these innocent people who have loved him his whole life. But hey, that's clearly something that Bart's father needs to do for his own conscience.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
And his mother's brother may have felt that this child was heavily spoiled, but a lot of us spoiler kids. They aren't plotting to murder us. Now, fortunately, at this point, the jury didn't get their violins out and start saying how sorry they felt for Bart. Because at the end of the day, they're not stupid. Bart acted in an inhumane way and executed his own mother and brother. Why would they give him any sympathy or extend any kind of leniency? Because he got spoiled. Oh, so you got a really lovely life and you got really spoiled and you got everything you could ever dream of. You got a Rolex watch. But at the end of the day, you were spoiled and you wanted more. So you thought, I'll just kill my parents and brother. Said no rational human being as an excuse ever. Now, I'm the first to say that when you are bringing up an individual with a predisposition for narcissism and psychopathy, certainly there are activation features that can be applied. But let me tell you, in the background of psychopath serial killers, for example, or psychopathic violent offenders, what we tend to look for is high-level abuse, horrible environments, activation features that are not positive or palatable to a child. We certainly don't look in their backgrounds and expect to see extreme wealth, joyful parenting, being cherished, being given lots of lovely things that makes you, what, resentful and want to murder people? No. What you have where this man is concerned is narcissism in every cell, psychopathy running through his core, and somebody born to be a killer. This isn't somebody that's been created. This is somebody who literally, as far as I am concerned, was born that way and whose outcome was always going to be of this malevolent nature. Now, the jury, as I said, they don't care. They will have had their own lives, probably a lot harder than Bart, and not murdered the parent for it. And when it comes to him, he basically says, oh, well, as a person, what I did, I developed this really irrational hatred of my family because I had to succeed. Oh, boo-hoo. Did you have a bit of a tiger parent who wanted you to do well for your own life and paid for you in every way, shape or form so you could succeed? And that makes you angry with them. Does it? Oh, how could you possibly cope? But this is his excuse, because it's not about him, is it? It's about everybody else's fault. If they'd just been nicer to him and kept paying for everything without expecting anything back, what kind of planet does this individual live on? And he also said that the reason that I killed them wasn't anything to do with money. Okay. It wasn't anything to do with money. So how come all of your associates said that was clearly the motivation? That was 100% the motivation, because at the end of the day, you didn't kill your parent and your brother in some incandescent rage. And bear in mind, his brother was a completely innocent party because he wasn't the parent and he wasn't making him do all these things. He was a younger kid. So the fact that he premeditated and coolly executed these with help, that's not a crime of passion in a rageful moment who, losing their mind, does something horrendous. No, this is absolutely somebody who is predisposed to wish to harm others for a gain of whatever it is they've decided they wish to gain. In this situation, freedom from any expectation and a plethora of money to last him a very long time. That's his motivation. Also, Bart says that since he's committed this heinous act, he's found God and now is a changed man. Now, I do not deny that faith is incredibly important, and psychologically, people who have done some pretty awful things can certainly feel that they have found a spiritual connection with the divine. But I don't believe that. I think this guy is just a class A manipulator. And also, when it comes down to that card that he sent to the DA, he said that wasn't threatening. It was a genuine Christmas greeting. Yeah, of course it was. Was it really, really like just a nice, benevolent way of being? Of course it wasn't. It was him yet again exerting a level of power and dominion and wanting to make that individual feel a little bit fearful for his own family's safety. That is so dark. Now, it doesn't take very long as well. 10 hours deliberation when it comes down to passing sentence and deciding what he's going to have to deal with. And the jury come back and say, death sentence. Simple as that. He deserves to be put to death. To be fair, Bart didn't even react to that verdict. he ends up getting sent to Texas death row. And Bart's actual execution date, it was going to be by lethal injection, that was scheduled for the 22nd of February 2018. So it's meant to have happened a few years ago. But his father just continued to fight. His father was adamant that he wanted his son's life to be spared. Now, meanwhile, what I would say is that Bart appeared to work to rehabilitate himself. So he managed to get 58 letters in support of clemency. This is including 7 from fellow death row prisoners. And they were saying what a lovely, well-liked and well-changed man he was. But let me just take you back to how he was after he stole $10,000 and went to Mexico. Everyone liked him there too. Everyone enjoyed being around him there as well. Because if you are a highly manipulative individual, it's pretty easy to convince people that you've had this alleged transformation. But let's be honest, we need to take it with a pinch of salt, simple as. Now, what is incredible about this case is that 2 days before his actual execution, the Texas State Board of Pardons and Paroles recommended clemency. Ah, it's a really, really rare decision for the board. Listen, we all know that the board are notorious for not sparing condemned prisoners, even in the weight of evidence that suggests a prisoner may be innocent. And if I look at the stats on that, between 2012 and 2016, it had refused 63 similar applications. However, in this case, it was successful. Now, in spite of that clemency being given, the death sentence itself still had to be commuted by the Texas governor, who was Greg Abbott. And literally minutes, and I mean minutes, before Bart was actually strapped to the gurney in Huntsville Prison execution chamber, Abbott dramatically granted clemency. Now, understandably, and for a lot of you listening to this, we've covered cases where, shall we say, there are questionable decisions made over somebody's future when it comes down to death row or otherwise. And lots of people are really, really unhappy with the outcome. They feel that there were far more deserving cases of clemency, and all of them have ultimately been denied. And the detective who was involved in the original investigation, they actually said, there's no definitive definition of a sociopath. It's someone who uses people as pieces in a game. And that's what Bart is. I think that's a massive underestimation as well. I think he's a stone cold psychopath with killing welcome in his veins as far as he's concerned. I don't think he's got a conscience. I don't think he understands empathy. And I'm sure he'll do a very good job at convincing everybody that he's just a really nice guy who's just a little bit misunderstood. I guess what we could say about Bart these days is he's probably in more of a comfortable situation in prison where, let's face it, he probably is relatively clever. He probably is relatively successful to many of those that surround him. Maybe that old superiority complex is effectively met in those circumstances where it couldn't be met with pro-social individuals in an academic setting that he so sadly failed to achieve. I find his father both incredible and also a little bit naive. I think that he has a huge level of forgiveness about who he is. I think that he loves in spite of knowing what his son has become. And I hate that he takes responsibility for his character, believing that it's just a situation where if he hadn't spoiled that child, a different outcome would have been assured. If he hadn't put pressure on that child to succeed, then he wouldn't have been dealing with the tragic loss of his wife and son. And I'm sure most of you will absolutely agree with me that so many parents bring their children up in pressure cookers where success is concerned, and they just turn out to do really well. They turn out to be doctors, lawyers, nurses. And I'm not saying that they enjoy the time that their parents are stressing that success necessity, but they certainly aren't out there planning their demise because of it. This is more than just a tale of a spoiled little boy gone bad. This is a tale of a stone-cold killer who tried to get away with murder. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.